You'd open your Bibles to the book of Ecclesiastes. We're going to spend most of our time there tonight. Glad to have all of you here. You know, the song that we just sang, Where Can I Go But to the Lord, is something that Solomon spent a lifetime trying to figure out, to nail that down. We think of all the different things that happen in this life and the different experiences that we have, but when it all comes down to it, it all is vanity. And we want to talk a little bit about that tonight. There was a tennis star named Boris Becker, and he was at the very top of the tennis world. He was at the brink of suicide, though. And he says, I won Wimbledon twice. I was the youngest player. I was rich. I had all the material possessions that anybody could ever possibly ask for. And it's that old, old song of the movie stars and pop stars who commit suicide. They had everything. They had everything, and yet they were so unhappy. I had no inner peace. He said, I was a puppet on a string. And Becker was not alone with those kinds of feelings. In that sense of emptiness, the echoes of a hollow life, they pervade in our culture today. One doesn't have to read contemporary biographies to find that the same frustrations and disappointments exist everywhere. John Higgins, an author of the successful novel called The Eagle Has Landed, was asked one time what he would like to have known as a young boy. His answer was simply that when you get to the top, there's nothing there. I want you to think about the book of Ecclesiastes, and even the name Ecclesiastes comes from a Hebrew word it's a very rare term that Solomon uses, and it means the one who addresses the assembly. In the Greek language, the Greek word literally comes from Ecclesiastes or Ecclesia, which means the assembly. And so we're talking about from somebody that is going to reveal to us some things as a preacher. And he reveals many, many things. But probably the most important thing that Solomon is going to teach us tonight is that every single one of us, at some point in our life, had a big void within us. And the only thing that can fill that void is God. And we can look at life from every angle and every perspective, which is what Solomon has done. But he finally concluded that it's really all about God. When we think about Solomon and his words, let's remember how important it is to understand the summation of this great king and very wise man. And so we want to make, the title of our lesson is Finding Joy Amidst Vanity in This World. And the first thing I want to do is bring up three observations. The first one is that there is an intriguing book, this book of Ecclesiastes. It's very interesting. It's attributed by most people to be from Solomon. In Ecclesiastes chapter 1 and verse 1, if you're there, the words of the preacher, the son of David, the king in Jerusalem, that kind of leads us to believe who the writer is. In verse 12 of chapter 1, Solomon says, I, the preacher, was king over Israel in Jerusalem. And so we're getting a pretty good idea who we're listening to. He also describes his search for the meaning of life. In Ecclesiastes chapter 1 and verse 13, he said, I set my heart to seek and to search out by wisdom concerning all that is done under heaven. This burdensome task God has given to the sons of man by which they may be exercised. Secondly, his search pertains to life under the sun. The phrase life under the sun is used 29 times in the New King James Version of the Bible, and it's in 27 different verses. It's used two times in two different verses. And under the sun suggests that the writings of this book are looking at life mostly from a worldly point of view. Solomon's going out into the world and he's trying all these things, and he's going to teach us and let us know exactly what's going on and what's important and what isn't important. In Ecclesiastes again, in chapter 1 and verse 3, he says, "What profit has a man from all his labor which he toils under the sun?" And the third thing is that his message may seem to be rather negative. And I'm hoping to show you tonight that it's not negative at all. It's building up to something wonderful. And that is a great joyous relationship with our God, and all the hopes that go along with that. A major theme of vanity of life, vanity, it's used 31 times. And you think about that. In 25 verses, it's used 31 times. Ecclesiastes chapter 1 and verse 2. Remember what he said? Vanity of vanity, says the preacher. Vanity of vanities, all is vanity. And so it's expounded upon much. In verse 14 of that same chapter, he says, "I have seen all the works that are done under the sun, and indeed, all is vanity and grasping for the wind." In order to understand these things, he mentions something else in the book, and that this book is twofold. He teaches us that everything in this world is vanity, but then he mentions such words as joy. He uses that three times to enjoy life. And he uses words like rejoice and joyfully. And those are where he's going to lead us. And so as we think about this, we want to look now at the idea that the book provides counsel for everyone who reads it on how to get the most out of life. What's important and what isn't important. How to find joy in this world that is just full of vanity. Things that aren't important. And we want to define vanity, the Hebrew word. I listened to the Hebrew fellow on the internet say that word probably 100 times today, and I still can't pronounce it. But you can see it there on the screen. It's not important. What is important is that it literally means vapor or breath. Figuratively, it's used as vanity or emptiness or something that's transitory, something that is going to be here and not necessarily over there. And Job uses the word, and he says, "I loathe my life. I would not live forever. Let me alone, for my days are but a breath." And so Job uses that word as what it is intentional for, is a breath. Psalm 39:5, the writer says, "Indeed, you have made my days as handbreadths. My age is nothing before you. Certainly every man at his best state is but a vapor." And when we think of that, keep those thoughts in mind, the word usage there. When Solomon uses that word vanity, he's using it figuratively for something that's transitory, something that's not permanent, and something that eventually just becomes empty. Ecclesiastes chapter 2, verse 22 through 24. Let's read that together. Chapter 2, verse 22. Solomon says, "For what has man for all his labor and for striving and for the striving of his heart with which he has toiled under the sun? For all his days are sorrow and his work burdensome. Even in the night his heart takes no rest. This also is vanity. Nothing is better for a man than that he should eat and drink and that his soul should," listen, "enjoy good in his labor. This also I saw was from the hand of God. So Solomon's going to tell us about what's not worth investing your entire soul into, and he's going to tell us what is worth investing your soul into. And so, in order to find this great joy that Solomon's talking about, in order for us to be able to look at life from a godly perspective, we first need to face the realities of this world. In Ecclesiastes chapter 2, and we're going to look at what the preacher has experienced. You think of Solomon, the wisest man on earth, a man with great riches and power. He had everything, and he was able to use that power to go out and experience everything. And we want to hear some of the things that he experienced about the world around us. In Ecclesiastes chapter 2, and in verse 1, Solomon said, I said in my heart, come now, I will test you with myrrh. Therefore, enjoy pleasure. But surely, this also was vanity. Solomon is telling us that there's vanity in pleasure. And I want you to think about Solomon when we think of pleasure. How many wives did he have? 700 wives. 300 concubines. 1,000. And then he had all the money and all the resources in the world. So when this man is telling us about his experience of pleasure, and he tells us it's vanity, we should be listening. Another thing that he tells us, if we look at Ecclesiastes, the same chapter 2, verse 11, then I looked on all the works that my hands had done, and all the labor in which I had toiled, and indeed all was vanity. Grasping for the wind, there was no profit under the sun. Look at chapter verse 22 and 23. For what has man for all his labor and for striving of his heart, for which he has toiled under the sun, for all his days are sorrow and his work burdensome? Even in the night his heart takes no rest. This also is vanity. Look at chapter 4 and verse 4. Chapter 4, verse 4. Again, I saw that all the toil and every skillful work of a man is envied by his neighbor. This also is vanity and grasping for the wind. So he's teaching us that being industrious and building and building and all the time and energy that we put into things, it's vanity. It's transient. It's temporary. It's something that is here today, gone tomorrow. And so we're not going to put our whole heart and strength, mind and soul, everything into those kinds of things because it's vanity. In chapter 2 and in verse 15, he tells us that, talks about the idea of human wisdom. He said, I said in my heart, as it happens to the fool, it also happens to me. And then, you know, who is Solomon? He was considered to be the wisest man. And he says it happens to the fool the same as it happens to me. No matter how wise you are, no matter how smart you are, it's still going to affect you. It's vanity. Because all that wisdom just goes by the wayside. Goes by the wayside. He says, and why was I then more wise than I said in my heart, this also is vanity. And you think about people that strive and strive and strive to learn and to learn more and to learn more. And are they really better off than the person who knows so much less? Because they're not. Vanity of all life, he says in verse 17. I hated life, he said, because the work that was done under the sun was distressing to me. For all is vanity and grasping to the wind. And he's talking from a perspective of somebody who realizes that I build, you know, I purchase, I work, I do all these things, but I realize that they're not mine. I'm just temporary in this world. And so he's giving us an insight on his experiences. Vanity of leaving an inheritance. What does he say there in Ecclesiastes 2, verse 18 and following? He says that I hated all my labor in which I had toiled under the sun, because I must leave it to the man who will come after me. And who knows whether he will be wise or a fool? Yet he will rule over all my labor in which I toiled and in which I have shown myself wise under the sun. This also is vanity. Therefore I turn my heart to and despair for of all the labor in which I had toiled under the sun. For there is a man whose labor is with wisdom, knowledge, and skill, yet he must leave his inheritance to a man who has not labored for it. This also is vanity and great evil. And I wonder sometimes why people buy insurance policies, you know, $1 million policy, and they leave that inheritance to their children. And you pay bills every month, you pay for this policy. Why? Teach them. But we do that. We build and we build and we work and toil. And it's when you die, it's going to be left to someone else. You can't take it with you, right? And so these are things that Solomon, through his experience, is teaching us. Things that are important. You know, when we think about human wisdom, think about Psalm chapter 53 and in verse 1 there. Psalm 53, 1. The fool has said in his heart, there is no God. We think about human wisdom in the world that we live in today. As we think about people and all the wisdom of man and their strivings to go to Mars right now and spending trillions of dollars to go to Mars, and they claim to be the wisest men. And so, the fool says in his heart, there is no God. All right, so the second thing is that the preacher, he made observations. And some of those observations are certainly helpful to us. The vanity of earthly existence. In chapter 3, verse 19, if we go back there to the words of Solomon. In chapter 3, and we're looking at verse 19 through 21. He says, for what happens to the sons of men also happens to the animals. One thing befalls them, one dies, so dies the other. Surely they all have one breath. Man has no advantage over the animal, for all is vanity. All go to one place, all are from the dust, and all return to the dust. Who knows the spirit of the sons of men which goes upward, and the spirit of the animal which goes down to the earth? Our physical existence upon this earth is vanity. We're no different in this physical sense than the animals that are here. From the dust you came, from the dust you shall return. The only difference that we saw there was that the animals don't have a soul that will ascend up into heaven. And he's making that very clear for us. Another thing that is vanity is Ecclesiastes chapter 4, verse 7 and 8. Then I returned, and I saw vanity under the sun. There is one alone without a companion. He has neither son nor brother, yet there is no end to all his labors, nor is his eye satisfied with riches. But he never asks, for whom do I toil and deprive myself of good? This also is vanity and a grave misfortune. When we think about that, acquiring great riches but being alone, many people have experienced that. In verse 9, he says, two are better than one because they have a good reward for their labor. If they fall, one will lift him up. One will lift up his companion. But woe to him who is alone when he fails, for he has no one to help him up. You think of striving as an individual all your life. And Solomon, through his observation, is letting us know that we need relationships. We need family. And those are the things that help us along in life. The vanity of political popularity, Ecclesiastes chapter 4 and in verse 16, there was no end of all the people over whom he had made king. Yet those who come afterward will not rejoice in him. Surely this also is vanity. You know, anybody here ever remember the name Nancy Hollister, Nancy Hollister. Does that sound familiar? I'm seeing a bunch of heads going like this. Nobody remembers Nancy Hollister. She was a politician. In fact, she was the first woman governor of Ohio. Think about that. You remember that? You don't remember that because those things aren't important. We don't hold on to those things. When Voinovich resigned as governor December 31st, 1998, she took over as governor. She only served 11 days. We don't remember her. And I imagine I listened to an interview of college students, and they just asked 10 college students one question: who was the first president of the United States? And I'm talking about last month. They asked that. You know what they said? Abraham Lincoln? Jefferson? Was it Jackson? Out of 10 people, 2 people knew it was George Washington. Vanity. Many dreams. And many words that we have. And when we're talking about dreams, we're talking about our aspirations and things that we imagine we could possibly do in life. And Solomon says that's vanity. In verse 5, chapter 5 and in verse 7, Solomon says, "For in the multitude of dreams and many words there is also vanity." And he says, "But fear God." It's all right. I'm not telling you not to dream and not to aspire to great things, but put it in its perspective. He also says that in a vanity of loving and abundance, chapter 5 and in verse 10, right there, he says, "He who loves silver will not be satisfied with the silver, nor he who loves an abundance with increase." This also is vanity. And again, you know, in the opening statements, we talked about that tennis star, Boris Becker, and how many people in his circle have committed suicide. They had riches, they had cars, and they had travel and planes, and they had everything possible, but they were alone. There's nothing at the top. And we think about those in our society today who love riches. And that's all vanity. He's guiding us with all of these thoughts. He's directing us to be thinking about what really is not important in life. Wealth without the gift of God. Look at Ecclesiastes chapter 6 and in verse 2. "A man whom God has given riches and wealth and honor so that he lacks nothing for himself of all he desires, yet God does not give him power to eat of it, but for a foreigner consumes it." This is vanity, and it is an evil affliction. We think that in this world country that we live in, we have so much, and we've been given so many great blessings, and yet when we don't receive it with God there as a gift of God, it's going to have a bitter taste. And so that's something else he teaches. Also, something that's not on the screen is a wandering desire in verse 9 of chapter 6. "Better is the sight of the eyes than a wandering desire," he says. It's better to be focused. Of course, our focus needs to be on the Lord and on eternity. And rather than to be wandering from place to place. James talks about a person that's double-minded, wavering in all his ways, like the sea that is driven by the wind and tossed, unstable. Foolish laughter, chapter 7 and verse 6, he says, "For like the crackling of thorns under a pot, so is laughter of the fool." And that, how many people in our world today are humanity, and everything has to be a joke, everything has to be funny. Solomon's telling us, no. Vanity of childhood and youth, Ecclesiastes chapter 11 and verse 10, he says, "Therefore remove sorrow from your heart and put away evil from your flesh, for childhood and youth are vanity." We're going to grow up. We need to mature. So Solomon's saying that. What is his conclusion? It's pretty simple. He stated, "Vanity of vanity," says the preacher, "vanity, all is vanity. He said in verse 14 of chapter 1, I have seen all the works that are done under the sun. Indeed, all is vanity, grasping for the wind. All the things that we've talked about, the pleasure, industry, human wisdom, the vanity of life itself, leaving an inheritance to other people, acquiring great riches, all those things he's saying are vanity. So he's warning us not to be striving for these things. Don't put everything you have in that one bucket called vanity. He wants us to get more out of life. And so, you know, J.C. Penney, a man, he said, if a man's business required so much of his time that he could not attend his local church, then that man had more business than God intended him to have. And that's what Solomon is saying about all the things in the world that people strive for. It's like the wind. It's here today, gone tomorrow. It's like a breath, a puff of air, a puff of smoke. And we don't want to spend our entire lives striving for things that are vanity, things that don't really matter, things that are transient, things that change from day to day. Many people have come to that conclusion, and many people have fallen into deep despair and despondency, and we don't want that. The preacher here, he wants us to learn something. He wants us to learn about true joy in life, and that's where we want to go. We want to go to a place where we're finding that joy in life that comes only from God. So again, we're looking at his personal experiences. Let's look at Ecclesiastes chapter 2 and in verse 10. Again, whatever my eyes desire, I did not keep from them. I did not withhold my heart from any pleasure, for my heart rejoiced in all my labor. And this was my reward from all my labor. To do the work and to find joy in that, especially when God is the focus of our work. He says his heart rejoiced in all his labor. His joy was in the doing of that. As he said there in verse 10, for my heart rejoiced in all my labor. And we think, put that in the spiritual sense of the church today. And how much joy would we have as if we're working for the Lord? Instead of, you know, I've been in this congregation 35 years and nothing's changed. Where baptisms are down, attendance is down, fewer and fewer people are interested. But you know, there's no joy in that. The joy is from when I talked to somebody yesterday. I met somebody named Frank, and Frank was interested. I asked him a question, and he responded with, well, can we study? Or I talked with a woman yesterday, and she told me she wasn't interested at all in what I had to say. But I gave her my card, and I said, well, you know, if you change your mind, call me. But if we're out doing the work, if we're evangelizing, if we're in the congregation and we're serving and working among one another, we could be visiting, making phone calls. There's so many things that we can do. And your joy would be so much greater if we're actually being part of the work. The joy is in the doing it. There is no joy in watching other people do the work. And so Solomon's letting us know from his experience, from his standpoint, how important that is. Secondly, the preacher's observation, when we think about what Solomon, he says there's nothing better than to enjoy the simple things. In verse 24 of chapter 2, he says, nothing is better for a man than that he should eat and drink, and that his soul should enjoy good in his labor. This also I saw was where? From the hand of God. The simple things. You know, we don't have to build immense cities. We don't have to have a house bigger than the neighbor's house and a car better than the neighbor's car. We don't have to amass these things. Simple things should be bringing us joy. A family member coming and visiting. Somebody in the church practicing hospitality. There are so many simple things that bring joy that lasts, that doesn't dissipate like the other things that we had discussed. And so it's just the simple things. The ability to enjoy what you have and what you do. As he said there, it comes from God. It comes from the hand of God. In verse 25, for who can eat or who can have enjoyment more than I? Think about that. Solomon, who was he? 700 wives, the richest man ever. He had every possession known to man. Who could enjoy better than him? But he understood that his joy was in the simple things. And I think we could focus on that. Some of the simple things in our life, studying the Bible together, worshiping together, assembling like this, having prayer with one another. Again, I mentioned hospitality. Being a part of one another's lives. Going out and sitting down in a restaurant somewhere and just opening your Bible and talking to people. Just very simple things. Life doesn't have to be complex. It doesn't have to be hard. And God gives wisdom and knowledge and joy to the man that is good in his sight. You see that there in verse 26. For God gives that. And also, he tells us that the wicked may acquire many things, but it eventually will be given to the good. Remember, when you die from this world, what you had goes to somebody else. And no matter how hard the wicked work, they're going to die too. And the world just continues to pass things on that literally belong to God from person to person to person. And as a man, a woman, as a person, we should rejoice and we should do good. And every man should enjoy the good of his labor. Ecclesiastes chapter 3 and verse 13. Everyone's work is his heritage, that work that we do. It's not what may happen after we're gone. We enjoy life while we're here with the simple things. In the day of prosperity, rejoice. In the day of adversity, we contemplate. Ecclesiastes chapter 7 and verse 14. He says that very clear. Surely God has appointed the one as well as the other. The rain falls on the just and the unjust. And so we remember these things. You know, Solomon commends, trusts, commits, he turns over enjoyment to each individual, the fruit of their labor. Verse chapter 8, verse 15, Solomon says, so I commended enjoyment. That means he trusts it over to us, entrusts that with us, commits that to us. A man has nothing better under the sun than to eat, drink, and be merry, for this will remain with him in his labor all the days of his life, which God gives him under the sun. And so Solomon has a conclusion. Eat, drink, and be merry, not without God, based upon what things God has provided. Express your joy in how you live. Let other people see that light. Don't find yourself sitting alone as that one person that doesn't have a companion. And live joyfully with your wife, your husband, your children, and your family. And enjoy your youth. But remember, you'll be accountable for everything that you do. And so he tells us to remove sorrow, put away evil, because youth is short-lived. Those are the things that Solomon is commending to us. Those are the things that he wants us to have. You know, There's a fellow named Robert Moffat that said we all have eternity to celebrate our victories, but we only have 1 hour before the sun sets. You see, life is short. It is vanity. It is just a breath. It's just a vapor. And we need to remember how important it is, because we do want to celebrate an eternity, but the only way to do that is to live life the way God has designed us to live. We remove the sorrows, remove those things, put them away from us. Life under the sun is just vanity. Without God, life is meaningless. Without God, you'll not be able to truly enjoy your time on the earth. Because when we think about that, that void is always there. There's always some kind of skepticism. There's always some kind of doubt. And only God can fill that. Popularity, prestige, pleasure, none of those things can fill the void. Because that void is shaped like God spiritually, and only He fits in there. And so we need to follow up with the conclusion that Solomon had in this very short book. In verse 13 of chapter 12 and following, let us hear the conclusion of the whole matter. Fear God and keep His commandments, for this is man's all. For God will bring every work into judgment, including every secret thing, whether good or evil. Life under the sun can be enjoyed with God as our guide, keeping our promises straight and our course true. God will bless us with wisdom, and He blesses us with the ability to enjoy this life in a way that without Him we cannot. To find joy in vanity, in amidst the vanity of this world, we just need to remember our Creator. Fear God, keep His commandments. Today, especially, we need to be a people who take heed to the warning of Solomon and to the experiences of Solomon and to the observations of Solomon. We can live our lives alone. We can live our lives seeking prosperity and power, but all of that's vanity. What isn't vanity is what happens after we die. When Solomon said that, you know, like the animals, people die dust to dust. But the difference is the soul lives on. And so what are you going to do? Are you going to listen to the wisdom of Solomon and seek first God, fear God, keep His commandments? Jesus gave us an option to be saved, an invitation rather. And you know what that is, to believe and be baptized for the remission of sins, to be added to the body of Christ. If you haven't done so, it's a shame to have your life be a life of vanity. Think about that, would you? We have the invitation. You can come forward if you have need while we stand and while we sing.